Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Daily Wager. Daily Wager is a new podcast for all your information on nightly matchups. Listen every weekday afternoon for the latest info on the biggest games and plays. Listen to Daily Wager as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if there were a bracket of my favorite sports traditions, filling out a bracket would be the champion of that bracket. I love taking all my friends and family in ESPN Tournament Challenge and beating every single one of them. Sign up now for ESPN Tournament Challenge at ESPN.com/bracket. And this year, you can boost your bracket with ESPN Plus. Use Bracket Predictor to analyze each matchup, get recommended picks one game at a time, and import your picks directly into ESPN's Tournament Challenge. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear. More driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we got some big news about what's going to happen with The Right Time. We'll also get to talking about the March Madness field, and we got your stories about that time you hooped or something against some dude that wound up going to the pros. But first... All right, Gabe, Drew Brees has retired. He retired 15 years to the day that he signed with the New Orleans Saints, and I have to say, I am disappointed that Drew Brees retired. I am. Not because, like, I just wanted to see Drew Brees play football again. That's not the reason why I'm disappointed that Drew Brees retired. I'm disappointed that Drew Brees retired because he put that video up on the internet the other day where he was pushing that sled uphill. And I was like, oh, snap. Drew Brees is going to try to come back. And Sean Payton's going to have to tell him he's not welcome. I was so ready for that. Like, do you realize how great that would have been for business? Like, how much time we would have got out of this if Drew Brees would try to come back and the Saints are like, yeah, let's talk for a second, Drew. I don't really know about that. And then Drew Brees out here trying to find somebody else to sign him, and then nobody else would be that excited about signing him, and then Drew Brees would be back on the internet putting up all the videos, trying to show everybody how swole he still is, how he still got it, everything else. And this dude had the nerve to walk away. It would have been, Gabe, you realize how dope it would have been if Drew Brees had decided he wanted to come back and the Saints were like, but we don't want you to come back. Michael Thomas has been like, I mean, he had his time.
Yeah, I mean, with Drew, you have made the point that he had been like sticking around to the point where he'd been doing the franchise a little bit of a disservice.
Yeah.
From the decline.
Not nobody, but rarely do these cats just walk away. Like, rarely do they walk out on a high note. And I don't think the Brees walked out on a low note. Like, it was obvious at the end that he was cooked. He was much better in his last season than Peyton Manning was. Now, of course, Peyton Manning wound up riding that defense to a Super Bowl. But you understand what I'm saying. Like, we looked at Drew Brees and we're like, yo, man, his arm looks like he's done. But he didn't just look abjectly terrible as we have seen a lot of these guys look when they get to the end. Like, he got out just in time, but that's normally that time where they'd be like, you know, I think if I get a good, strong offseason in, you know, I was hurt this year, you know, I wasn't able to, like, really put it together and everything else, but you give me a little bit of time, I'll still be able to get it. I was here for that drama. I wanted it all, every single bit of it. We ain't getting none of it. Now, most of us will talk about Drew Brees entirely in the context of the Saints and the importance that he has with the New Orleans Saints. And I think 15 years after the fact, it's kind of easy to forget that in 2006, they were coming back to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. But there were two guys that came in the same year. They signed Drew Brees. They drafted Reggie Bush. Now, Reggie Bush never turned out to be the pro football player that I think a lot of us thought that it was possible that he could be. Now, I admit, I was always a little bit skeptical because the do-everything college guy, they still ain't so great at figuring out how to use them in the league. But Reggie Bush was a giant, giant star. Like, if you are a young person listening to this, like, and you are in your early 20s, I don't know how easy it is to make you understand the magnitude of stardom of Reggie Bush in college. There has not been a bigger star as a college football player coming into the NFL since Reggie Bush than Reggie Bush. Like, you got a guy like Tebow, for example, who was a giant star, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't quite like this. Like, Reggie Bush walking in the door with the Subway commercials and everything else. What happens when you're the man at USC, right? The people that make a lot of these advertising decisions and Hollywood-type decisions, they're USC football fans. You know, like, that's a function of L.A. Part of why O.J. Simpson could become what O.J. Simpson became is because he went to USC. It might not have shaken out the same way, even if he had gone to UCLA, just because of the contacts and connections that you wind up with. But Reggie Bush was that dude. And so the Saints had left. They'd gone and played that season. I think it was in San Antonio. And the excitement that they had in coming back to New Orleans was fueled also by having those two guys, you know? And so we lock in, I think, on the New Orleans part. But let's not forget what the path was that Drew Brees took. And Gabe, I don't know how much of this you would remember because this is now 20 years ago. In the 2001 draft, Michael Vick was the number one overall pick. But the San Diego Chargers, who I believe were coming off a 1-15 season, they had the number one pick that year. Their general manager, John Butler, made the call and said, we're going to trade out of the number one pick. Trade that to the Falcons. Falcons took Vic, great pick for them, changed the course of the franchise, all of that stuff. The calculated risk that Butler made was, I'm going to trade out of that number one pick. I'm going to trade down to number five, where we're going to take LaDainian Tomlinson. Then, by virtue of us having finished 1-15 last year, we will have the first pick in the second round, where they took Drew Brees. Okay. Drew Brees was not good as a rookie. Drew Brees was not good in his second year. Drew Brees was not good in his third year, to the point where the Chargers, who had the number one pick in the draft in 2004, went and took a quarterback. They took Eli Manning, made the trade, and they brought in Phillip Rivers. The plan was for Phillip Rivers to be the starter in 2004, but he held out, got to camp late, didn't have time to get up to speed. Drew Brees kept his job for two more years, right? By the time it was done, at the end of the 04 season, the Chargers put the franchise tag on Brees, kept him for 2005. At the end of 2005, let him go. He wound up there in 2006. Rivers got the job and was ready to play in 2006. Boom. I think it was a move that ultimately worked out for everybody. But the reason that I bring this up is it took 4 years for Drew Brees to get it right. Drew Brees won comeback player of the year when he wasn't coming back. Like, there was no injury to point to or anything else. He won comeback player of the year just by being sorry. All right? There ain't a lot of dudes in this day and age that are going to wind up in a situation where they get 3 years to figure it out, let alone a second round pick. Now, a big part of that, of course, with him being able to get the time, I believe, has to do with the fact that this was prior to the rookie wage scale. So if you were going to take a quarterback in the first round, you were going to have to pay him. Like, it was a different math on the decision making of what you would do at that point. But that doesn't really happen anymore. Now, we've seen this happen with Sam Darnold, for example. They gave Sam Darnold 3 years to get this thing figured out. But if Sam Darnold was a second round pick, there'd have been somebody else in there already. Period. That's what it would have been, right? They'd have gone and they'd found a way. Dudes don't wind up getting that time. How does Drew Brees' career go if he doesn't get the time? Like, somebody who then decides to pick up Drew Brees after year three at that point, are they making him the starter? Are they putting him in? Like, this whole thing and the way that it wound up was really, really close to being derailed. And instead of being derailed, he winds up playing for the Saints. And you're not going to find a lot of quarterbacks who mean more to their franchises than Drew Brees means to his. First of all, he's the only quarterback worth a damn that they've ever had. Like, this is the truth. Now, I think that this dude is better than he got credit for being, but this is a point still worth picking up. You know who the second best quarterback in the history of the New Orleans Saints is after Drew Brees? It's Aaron Brooks. You go back and look at it, it's pretty much no question. It's Aaron Brooks. Now, part of why you think of Aaron Brooks as being sorrier than he was is because he's black, and that's just how it goes. He messes up, has a bad play, has a couple bad games. You can't never, ever let go of that with a black quarterback. That's how it goes. But even still, if Aaron Brooks was the greatest player in the history of your franchise, y'all wouldn't really bring it. Okay? So, more information about the Saints. And I know you guys, I mean, you know it. I hate the Saints. Actually, no. I don't hate the Saints. I hate Saints fans more than anything else. But these things I am going to tell you are true. Gabe, do you know when the New Orleans Saints won their first playoff game, keeping in mind that the New Orleans Saints joined the NFL in 1967?
2000.
The year 2000.
Really? Wow.
The Saints missed the playoffs. First playoff appearance is 87. First playoff victory in the year 2000. Okay? This was not a venerable franchise ever. That ain't never been the way that anybody has looked at the New Orleans Saints. They were sorry, sorry, sorry. That's why I tell these jokes about the paper bags, and that's why it is the Saints fans get so damn mad at me, because they know how sorry they used to be. Their second playoff victory ever, literally second playoff victory ever, was in 2006. They won a division playoff round game before they lost in the NFC Championship. That was only the second time they'd ever won a playoff game. 3 years later, they won a Super Bowl. 3 years later, they won a Super Bowl. Like, the Saints had never had nothing until they got Drew Brees. They barely had pretty good quarterbacks. They got one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. They had a 15 run of relatively consistent success. Like, there's a 3 year patch where they had 3 straight 7-9 seasons, but they had a 15 year run of what all of us would term to be success. You could put it in the context of Super Bowls and like how far you go and everything else. But no, man, they made it to 3 NFC championships and they won a Super Bowl in that run. That's pretty damn good. Like, that's pretty strong. And there's a whole generation of Saints fans who grew up and have no memory of the Saints being sorry. And that is Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Like, that's it right there. Then you add on top of that the sentimental part of it, given the role that the Storm plays in everything and everything else. There's this one. He is this one. Like, you think about, like, the Packers, for example. Packers had Brett Favre, and that's cool. They had Aaron Rodgers after. They had Bart Starr before. Buffalo, part of why they're so excited about Josh Allen is this is the first one they've had, like, since Jim Kelly. And before Jim Kelly, you're just talking about, what, Joe Ferguson or something like that, you know? But even Jim Kelly doesn't mean anything to Buffalo close to what Drew Brees means to the Saints. Because at least Buffalo had O.J. Simpson at a point. Like, they had a superstar caliber player. The Saints had a lot of really good defensive players, but they never really had, like, a superstar in the way that they've had Drew Brees. They love that dude. He means something completely different to them than I think any player means to his franchise in the NFL. You know, like, even Tom Brady. Like, I mean, obviously, Patriots never had a quarterback as good as Tom Brady, but the gap between him and Drew Bledsoe is a lot narrower than the gap between Drew Brees and Aaron Brooks. It's just not there. And can't forget about this, Drew Brees holding it down for the little homies. I don't think we give him enough credit. And he wasn't like a little homie like Michael Vick was a little homie who could otherwise do superhuman things. No, sir, Drew Brees out there trying to stretch his neck as far as he can, standing on his tippy toes, still finding a way to make it work. He has got to be an inspiration to y'all, right? He got every inch he could out of his frame. Every single one. His calves, man, they got to look like hams the way he always standing on his toes. That neck, he out here looking like a giraffe, except he's too short to be called a giraffe. But he trying his hardest to be a giraffe. Get that neck up there. See over that line. You know what I'm saying? Like, he doing everything he can, trying to figure out a way to make it work. And took it to the Super Bowl. Good for y'all, man. Y'all need to retire his jersey. All y'all need to go out, get y'all some size medium jerseys. Tell Drew Brees thank you. All the little quarterbacks, and Gabe, you know I'm right about this. All the little quarterbacks, Drew Brees is their inspiration.
The big shoulder pads.
Yes, that's right.
Balding early.
Yeah. He showed y'all can still do it. And in spite of the fact that he is not very tall, establish himself as a leader of men. Now, he's not the first short person to be a leader of men, but he seems to have a much more pleasant disposition than most of the short people who wind up being in charge of something. And you know why? Because Drew Brees stuck his neck up as high as he could. It was like, up 6 feet. Listen to me now. And they did. I'm just saying, I'm just trying to explain to people that Drew Brees is a hero for a lot of people. Now, of course, he had that thing last year we kind of messed up. You remember that? We talked about the national anthem and all of that stuff. And we talked about it when it happened. And I actually think in retrospect, because Drew seemed to try to like correct some things after that had happened. But I talked about it then, and I do think it's worth noting now. And the reason I'm bringing this up is not to dog Drew Brees, but to understand that part of the reason why that story was such a big thing when it happened is that his teammates and fans, well, some fans, obviously, not all, they were so disappointed. And the reason they were disappointed is because of how highly they thought of Drew Brees going into it. Like all the other stuff that I'm talking about, some stuff I'm joking about or whatever, but all those things, it was so heartbreaking for a lot of those fans when Drew Brees did that and when Drew Brees said that. And it's good that he seemed to come back on the back end and do some listening and figure out how to make it work with his folks. But the clearest indicator of all the goodwill that Drew Brees had built up was actually how hard people took it when he went out like that about the anthem. Like that was the sign of what he had built and what he was and what he meant, you know, what he meant to the people in that city, right? And particularly the black people in that city, that very, very, very black city. It hurt because he was Drew Brees. There were lots of other people that could have said that and it wouldn't have been such a big deal. It hurt because he was Drew Brees. And I wonder for Drew Brees if he saw that and he came in that moment to realize what he meant to those people and why that mattered. And so I give him all the props in the world on that. I give him all the credit on the Hall of Fame career. I also find this part to be interesting. Gabe, you think about this. We always think about like quarterback versus quarterback. You know what I mean? Like if a team wins, the quarterback won that game. Let us take a moment to consider that Drew Brees went to a Super Bowl. His team went to a Super Bowl by beating Brett Favre's team in the NFC Championship game and then beating Peyton Manning's team in the Super Bowl. Drew Brees once lost an NFC Championship game to a team that was quarterbacked by Rex Grossman. Drew Brees once lost an NFC Championship game to a team that was quarterbacked by Jared Goff. Drew Brees' team once lost a divisional playoff round to a team quarterbacked by Case Keenum. Drew Brees' team once lost in the first round of the playoffs as defending Super Bowl champions to a team that went 7-9. The point I'm making here is not to dog Drew Brees. It's just to say how random so much of that stuff is and how these things are typically not just quarterback versus quarterback. And the role that luck plays in a career, right? Brett Favre threw that crazy interception at the end of the 2009 NFC Championship game. Saints wind up winning in overtime, right? If Favre doesn't throw that crazy pick, how does that turn out? We spending all our time talking about how Drew Brees is out here losing to Case Keenum and Jared Goff and Kirk Cousins, forgot about him, right? Like that's what we'd be saying about Drew Brees if it weren't for that run. And what's interesting about Drew Brees is we don't really talk about the fact that he had this run where he beat Brett Favre and Peyton Manning back to back. We don't even do that. And part of it is because once he got that Super Bowl, he just became Drew Brees. He was made right then, in stone right then. He was that dude right then. And you know what? He is that dude, right? I just bring that up to say that sometimes we get it right as it happens and we just decide, okay, cool. We're good with this. We appreciate what it is. Because Drew Brees, think about this. As good as Drew Brees was, never first team all pro. Never been a time where I think any of us thought that Drew Brees was the best quarterback in the league. But we have held him in basically the same esteem as all of those guys. Some of that's the Katrina goodwill. Some of that is, I mean, damn, you won a Super Bowl with the Saints. And some of that is, this is the guy that somehow we managed to look at and appreciate him for what he is without letting a lot of the noise interfere. So congratulations to him on his fantastic career. And good luck to you, Saints fans. Y'all gonna throw Jameis out there. Let's see how that goes. Because I'm here to tell you, I am looking forward to the Saints being sorry again. Woo! You ain't gonna be able to tell me nothing. All right, Gabe, it is time for the NCAA tournament. By the way, before we get to that NCAA tournament part, because I'm going to tell you guys that we have a tournament challenge bracket, the right time bracket. If you go look it up, ESPN.com/bracket, search for the right time 2021. We have got our bracket set up. You guys can come in and join. The winner of the bracket will receive a free copy of the book that we are going to use for the Right Time Book Club this year. So stay tuned for more details on that. But get in there and get yourself a free book. So, you know, go ahead and check that out. That also reminds me, I meant to say this a little bit earlier, but I think I'll go ahead and say it right now. Some of you may be listening to this podcast on a Monday, the day that is released, which is something that you ordinarily have not done. Yes, we are changing the schedule on the Right Time. We will be releasing episodes on Monday, on Wednesday, and on Friday. That's right. We are expanding now. The podcast will be 3 days a week. The format will be largely the same, except Friday will be Foxworth Friday. Dominic Foxworth will join us on the Right Time every Friday. So just wanted to let you guys know that we doing it for y'all. Anyway, check that out. But back to the NCAA tournament. It is here. Gabe, have you watched any college basketball this year?
I have not.
I haven't watched a lick, man. even this weekend when I was like, all right, cool. Time for me to watch some college basketball and get ready. I mean, I tried and then I wound up doing some other stuff. I have watched a couple games in the last couple weeks. I watched the second half of Gonzaga and BYU. Gonzaga looks good. And I have watched a couple of Cade Cunningham games. That's the number one pick in the draft right there. I ain't got to see nobody else to know that that's the number one pick in the draft. And get ready, because that dude is a dog. Like, it's one thing to have a guy that's really, really good. It's another thing. We have seen these guys like him that are coming in and you're basically expecting to be the number one overall pick. We've seen these cats come in and not necessarily seem like they're the most invested in the process, especially when they're going to a team that is not necessarily like a perennial contender. Now, he went to Oklahoma State in part because they hired his brother to be an assistant coach. And anybody else that had the opportunity to hire his brother and did not was a fool. Like they say, his brother might be a decent coach anyway, but even if he ain't, nah, man, you go ahead and make that work. That dude can hoop, and he's got it. The intensity that I saw from him and the way that he was like rallying with his teammates, I was like, okay, that's a guy that you want on your team. Like, I don't really get too much in that touchy-feely type stuff about basketball, but I do think, especially with college hoops, given the circumstances and everything else, nah. You want a dude like this. This is the guy that you want on the team. And that's about all I got for you, dog. Duke not in the tournament this year. Kentucky not in the tournament this year. Big Ten apparently is running things. Illinois is good again. Michigan is good again. It's here. I just don't know anything about it. Like, this has been the hardest season for me to get into any of the college sports, really. Like, football and basketball, I really wasn't able to do it. But especially this year, because the schedule was so inconsistent, you never know who would or would not be playing. We didn't have any chance to, like, actually get introduced to the players. Like, it was wild to me about this season. And you guys let me know if you feel the same way. And I imagine a lot of you do, given that I actually do this for a living. By now, I know who players are. Like, even if I haven't watched them play, I'm like, oh, I know about that guy. I should tune in and watch. I don't know who the dudes are this year on these teams. Like, I know that Luke Garza dude plays for Iowa. I can't give you nobody else. Illinois, I can't give you nobody. Michigan, I can't give you nobody. Baylor, I can't give you nobody. Gonzaga, because I watched them play a couple times, I can give you a dude or two. Like, they got a couple lottery picks on that team. But this is the year that I think more than ever, people are going to be introduced to players via the NCAA tournament, which is typically used to introduce people to players anyway. This is my question, though, for a lot of you guys. How interested are you in watching the NCAA tournament? Like, it's a ritual for a lot of us, right? Like, this is the thing we do. It happens. It comes around. We get into it. You know, we do it because we did it. And so we are probably going to do it, but it just feels weird. You know, they're doing it with these pods in Indianapolis, you know, and everything else. And so nothing is going to feel right about this. Like, they're playing some games at Hinkle Fieldhouse, you know, the Hoosiers court. And they slapped like the big March Madness logo on the ground because, of course, they have to. And it's like, damn, this don't even look right. So with the NBA, for example, I was okay with them having an all-star game. I thought that people were making too much out of the situation. I recognize that the NCAA has to have this tournament. There's no way around it. There's just too much money on the line. They have to have this tournament. But again, the players don't get paid and everything else. Like, this feels unseemly. Like, this doesn't feel like the actors involved have true agency over the situation. Are we going to be able to really get into this like we had before? Is it going to be like the same level of excitement from the players that we had seen before? We've got some interesting stories. Patrick Ewing, somehow Georgetown turned into like Georgetown in the Big East tournament. So it'll be interesting to see that. Rick Pitino's in the tournament, Gabe.
Both UConn and UCLA are in the tournament.
Oh, the Gabe Bassett alma maters.
Yeah, feeling like a proud dad. Haven't watched a game all year, but I made it. Here we are.
Now, let me tell you this, though. I got no question in my mind who the best coach in the tournament is.
Mick Cronin?
This is, oh God, I hate that guy so much. It's Rick Pitino. There's no doubt it's Rick Pitino. He didn't get fired for performance over there at that other job. Like, I look up and we got to play against them. As disjointed and everything as this season has been, I am nervous. It's a bummer that Duke's not in it, though. Except it's kind of not. Can we all be honest here? Can Duke go back to recruiting jerks? It was a lot more fun when Duke was recruiting a bunch of jerks and we could all dislike those jerks. Right? Like, they don't even recruit enough jerks for us to accidentally make jerks out of people who are not jerks. Like, J.J. Redick, for example, wasn't a jerk. But he got lumped in, so we made him a jerk, right? But since Grayson Allen, first-class jerk, we ain't had a jerk. It's more fun with Duke there to hate.
They really had the corner on the scrappy white dude who can knock down threes.
So it's been an evolution on this. I forget who I was talking to about this the other day. And depending on when you pick this up, it's kind of scrappy, but yes and no. So in the beginning, those dudes weren't just scrappy. Like, those dudes were tough. Like I think of scrappy as like that Wojo dude. Like, you don't even remember when Wojo was in college. The most hateable college basketball player of all time. But like, Wojo was scrappy. And I think of that as just kind of being annoying and just a pest and in the way. Christian Laettner was a dog. Like, Bobby Hurley was a dog. Like, what they had before, it was easy to just look at them as like, oh, they got a bunch of rich white dudes. No. They had some like from the dirt type white dudes coming in and playing for them, and some from the dirt type black dudes. Then over a while, it got to be a little bit more bourgeois and got to be a bit more obnoxious. But in the beginning, the problem with Duke was much less about the players than it was about the way the broadcasters talked about the players. You know, they were the ones who were different, that kind of stuff, right? Then they actually started recruiting people that just made it impossible for you to, like, not hate Duke. At least if he was raised right, you know. Then they like went in on just kind of obnoxious jerks. And then it was 2000 where they were just getting like, there wasn't nothing really tough about those white dudes they was bringing in. They was just white dudes that were like cosplaying tough. And then they was getting black dudes that was like the white dudes. But since the white dudes were there, people wouldn't get around to hating the black dudes other than Shane Battier. Like, Shane Battier got grandfathered into being disliked like he was one of the white dudes. You know, but like Lance Thomas, he was just like the white dudes. He was just like the white dudes, but he wasn't white, so people kind of let him slide. Nolan Smith, good to pop up off the ground, clapping in your face and doing all that type stuff and everything else. Like, they were absolutely Duke dudes, and they hid behind the white dudes and were not disliked as a thing. The thing I always disliked what people said about Duke, though, was the idea that people disliked those dudes just because they were white. And no, that's not true. They disliked them because they were jerks. Then you added the fact that they were white, and then white basketball fans got this weird thing where y'all each y'all's own. You know what I'm saying? Like, white basketball fans either love the white dude or hate him and think he's a fraud. Some self-hate going on about your basketball confidence, you know what I'm saying, in that world when it comes down. But now we don't even have it. Like, we don't get Duke. Like, is there any college basketball team left that people just root against? I can't think of one. Somebody, man, get some jerks or get some hoodlums. Because then people will hate the hoodlums, and then I will start liking the hoodlums because I dislike the people that dislike the hoodlums. But I need some negative energy in my college basketball, because as of now, it's just kind of no energy. It's just not there. But there's a bracket challenge. The Right Time 2021. Go to ESPN.com/bracket. Join us. You can win a book.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
Today's If You Haven't Heard difference-making stories brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car. Love your car with the new CarMax Love Your Car Guarantee.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from tech.
I'm Dalvin Brown, and I cover innovation for the Washington Post. Traditionally, people use smart speakers to listen to music or to tune into their favorite podcasts. But researchers at the University of Washington say they found a new way to use the devices. Apparently, through an AI-powered algorithm, they're able to turn smart speakers into heart rhythm trackers. So the idea is, if you have a telemedicine appointment, you could repurpose your smart speaker into an ECG that can detect your heartbeat and perhaps send that information to your doctor. It would work by sending an audio signal into the room at a volume that humans can't hear. And as the pulses bounce back to the speaker, the algorithm would extract your heartbeat. And then a second algorithm would be applied to determine the amount of time between those two heartbeats. And a doctor could use that information to identify irregular heart rhythms. While it's an interesting new development, it could take years before that type of algorithm was approved for devices. And in the meantime, the researchers are trying to find out if they could use it to detect sleep apnea.
That seems like it could be really helpful. Don't trust it. How about you?
Part of the reason why you can just go forward with something like that is it has to be tested out and all of the sort of like unintended consequences that come along with giving up that kind of access. What's to become of the data that's mined in that sort of way and all the abuses, whether or not like the negatives outweigh the positives on that sort of thing. But it is pretty cool. I mean, I did grow up in an era where older folks had the little monitor on their wrist that they hit. It's like, help, I've fallen and I can't get up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Come a long way.
Yeah. I just don't trust it. It's all designed by people who ain't trying to help me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't need Bezos figuring out how my heart beating. I just can't believe people still doing it. Lazy, man. Just that's all I every time I hear somebody's got a smart speaker, all I can think is, you lazy. Like the things that you're asking the smart speaker to do aren't that hard. I think using like Siri or whoever you got on your phone is pretty damn lazy a lot of the time. It ain't that hard.
All right, this next story comes from business.
Scott Schwebke, investigative reporter, Southern California News Group. A former employee of a Panda Express in Santa Clarita, California, alleges she was required to strip down to her underwear and hug a partially clad coworker during a cult-like ritual at a 2019 training seminar sponsored by the company as a prerequisite to promotion. The 23-year-old woman is suing Panda Restaurant Group and Alive Seminars and Coaching Academy for sexual battery, a hostile work environment, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. The lawsuit was filed last month in Los Angeles County Superior Court. The seminar was held in a warehouse in East Los Angeles and attended by 20 to 50 Panda Express employees from throughout Southern California. The complaint alleges the seminar was bizarre and quickly devolved into psychological abuse. Some participants were prohibited from using their cell phone, and there was no clock in the room, and the door and windows were all covered with black cloth. During the seminar, the woman allegedly was forced to strip down to her underwear under the guise of trust building. The exercise culminated when the victims had to stand up to yell about their inner struggles until everyone else in the group believed them. However, a male participant had some difficulty convincing the others and as a result broke down in tears. The plaintiff was told to stand up, go to the middle of the room with a male participant where they were forced to hug it out wearing nothing but their underwear. As time went on, the seminar more and more resembled a cult ritual, the complaint alleges. The seminar staff dimmed the lights and the plaintiff and the other attendees were instructed to stand up and close their eyes, pretending that a light from above would come down and take all the negative energy out of them, then pretend that a hole opened up in the ground and swallowed the negative energy, according to the complaint. While this was happening, one of the Alive Seminars staff had a cell phone with light on recording the plaintiffs who were undressed. The victim went to the seminar hopeful and optimistic about her future with Panda Express, but left scarred and downtrodden, the suit says. Soon after, she quit her job because of emotional distress. She is seeking unspecified damages. Panda Express officials in a statement said the company does not condone that type of behavior that is alleged and would not intentionally allow it to occur.
You know, I've been trying to figure out where to begin with this, and I'm going to begin where this story begins. In a warehouse in East LA? Hold on. I feel like Panda Express should be able to get a better space than a warehouse in East LA. Now, I don't know what East LA is looking like these days, just to be clear, right? I'm not sure how it looks now, but you know what you hear when I say East LA. Like, where you going, man? I go out to this warehouse in East LA. You need me to go with you? All right, and so now we get here, and they got you, like, actually bearing your soul to your Panda Express coworkers. I'm struggling to understand how I didn't hear nothing about nobody walking out. And look, I'm, you know me, man. I'm on the side of the working man. I understand circumstances. People need their jobs, so forth and so on, everything else. Once it got to stripping down and hugging it out, I am a little bit surprised that nobody left. I'm not blaming anybody for it. I would imagine if I were a woman and some dude has stripped down to his drawers and you telling me I got to go hug him and I don't even know him. Nah, man, that's where the line is drawn. That's where the line is drawn, because I also could be wrong. I don't know nothing about the dude. I don't know what he's into. I don't know what he's about. But I think the likelihood of him being like, yeah, let's do that, and her being like, yeah, let's do that, they're not the same. They're not in the same place. So they in there in a warehouse in East LA, hugging it out in the name of Panda Express. And one thing I also took from this is, apparently, I mean, it's California, but apparently Panda Express does not drug test. Because, like, everything that you're hearing, doesn't that all sound real high to you?
I mean, if we're truly, like, going into cult, like, behavior, this is usually when they, like, drop the dose.
Like, this all sounds like it started, like, the idea started with, dude, you know what we should do? But I just heard a lot of high, like the logic behind it all. We need to, like, build trust, you know, get closer to one another. And then, like, oh, let's get out here and let's talk about our feelings, man, you know. But then they had the dude. I can't imagine you telling me I got to get out. This is the other part I don't understand about this. So they were telling these people to talk about their innermost feelings and all this stuff. And you got to, like, scream it out to make people believe you. And they said that one dude did it and the people didn't believe him and he broke down in tears. This is what I'm trying to figure out. And this tells me what corporate lackeys a lot of people are. Like, I done seen people walk off their shift at fast food for a lot less than this, right? So I'm going to believe that this is in the managerial class, all right? Y'all some real corporate lackeys. And the reason I know that they some real corporate lackeys is this. When the dude get up there, whoever the first person is, and starts talking about their feelings, and somebody looks around the room and is like, well, group, do we believe him? How is the answer not yes so we can hurry up and leave? You know what I'm saying? Like this is the person that asked a question in class in college at 10:49. We almost done. We about to be out of here. Ain't no, like, for those of you who did not go to college, there ain't no bell in college, right? Like, in high school, the bell rings, everybody knows it's time to go. Ain't no bell in college. You just there till it's done, right? These jokers, oh no, I didn't feel that in my soul. I felt that before you started talking. I can just see it on your face. Somebody else stand up so I can see it in your face so we can hurry up and go home. Like, I feel like when you do that work training stuff, isn't your biggest hope that we can just go home before, like, we're supposed to be here till 5, but I think we'll be done at 3:30? Instead, you jokers were actually asking more questions till the dude started crying, when you should have just been trying to take your ass home. You in a warehouse in East LA. Don't you want to go home? Don't you want to be literally anywhere else in the world other than this? And I would like to note, and this is very important, most of us do not put on our drawers expecting other people to see them. Okay? Now, in my life, I have gotten better about switching out draws. You know, I now do it before it has to be done because I got some money now. Now, all y'all got enough money to keep a regular draws rotation. But fellas, y'all know when y'all get new draws. Y'all get new draws when your woman gets you new draws. It's not a flattering characteristic of us as a species. But that's what happens, all right? I assure you, most people's draws are not intended for public consumption on a work day. They're just not. I did have a buddy in college, though, who told us that he was so meticulous about matching his clothes, that he would match his drawers with his outfit. Honestly, I don't think I own enough pairs of drawers to be just certain that when I go in that drawer, I'm going to have a matching combination, right? That is also, for those of you who go back with me, a friend of mine that owes me that $200. And when I tried to get that $200 back from him, he explained to me that a lot had happened since we had talked, including he had given his life to Christ, at which point I asked if he also gave Jesus my $200. But I still want to know what the hell Jesus got to do with you giving me my money.
In a warehouse in East LA.
In a warehouse. For Panda Express. Wow.
Last one comes from transportation.
Hi, this is Linda Robertson, Miami Herald journalist. Florida retained its number one ranking as the place where a pedestrian is most likely to be struck and killed by a driver in the United States. This is according to the 2021 Dangerous by Design report from Smart Growth America and the National Complete Streets Coalition. So that means that walking can be very hazardous to your health in Florida. You're basically taking your life in your hands when you're on foot in our state. 9 of the most 15 hazardous U.S. cities for pedestrians are in Florida. Orlando is ranked number 1. In other words, Orlando is the least safe city in the country to be a pedestrian. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach metropolis ranked number 13. So Florida cities dominated this list again, as they have in past reports. Drivers hit and killed 53,435 pedestrians, more than 17 people per day on average, throughout the country in the last decade, which represents a 45% increase over the previous decade. And a big reason for this is the way that our streets are designed. They're designed for speed, to move cars as quickly as possible. They're not designed for pedestrians, cyclists, people using mass transit, people who are disabled. So part of the flaw here is that our states and our state departments of transportation are oriented toward moving vehicles as quickly as possible and not accommodating human beings who also need to share these streets. It's a troubling trend, and Florida, once again, is the deadliest state in the nation if you're on foot.
Yeah, so one of those things, you would imagine that Orlando would be number one on this pedestrian thing just because of the tourists. Like, proportional to the size of the place, you could get how that would be the case in Orlando. Did you know, Gabe, that being a person of color is a risk factor in pedestrian deaths? No lie. I am looking at this right now. A simple chart from Dangerous by Design, Smart Growth America's 3-year-old report on pedestrian safety. Okay. People of color and older people are overrepresented among pedestrian deaths. Non-white individuals account for 34.9% of the national population, but make up 46.1% of pedestrian deaths. In some states, this disparity is even starker. In North Dakota, for example, Native Americans make up just 5% of the population, but account for almost 38% of pedestrian deaths. Gay, people just be hitting us with cars. That's so wild.
Hit and run is a crime that people must feel like they can get away with then.
Well, yeah, I think it's got to be harder than ever now in the era of all these cameras and everything else. But I will tell you this. I imagine that there is no more tempting crime in the world than hit and run. Think about this for a second. Oh, man. I am in big trouble. I wish somehow I could just get out of here. Wait a minute. I'm in a car. Like, that's my thought on that, is that people panic in those times. Like, people run out of rooms and stuff happens or whatever it is. And I don't think they're all terrible humans. I think they just immediately go to their flight impulse, and their flight impulse is now has an automobile attached to it. And they jet out. And I know back in the day, I mean, I don't see how you couldn't get away with hit and run back in the day. But now somebody going to get you on some camera somewhere.
Couple that with how drivers in Florida don't necessarily have the greatest reputation.
I'm going to tell you this right now. I say this with no exaggeration, right? Nobody ever says, oh, wow, that city has great drivers. You know what I mean? Nobody ever does that. This is one of those things. It's like your cell phone carrier. Very rarely. Everybody hates their cell phone carrier. You know, everybody hates the president of their university, right? Like, some things nobody ever talks about how they like them. However, I lived in Miami for 4 years, and I am here to tell you, those are the worst drivers in America. And I'm not exaggerating. Like, Gabe, you see me right now. Like, I'm not being dramatic at all when I say this. I'm saying this with the straightest face in the world. They are the worst drivers in America. Like, start there. And then get into all that stuff he talked about, which is really interesting, about how the streets are made for getting cars around. The streets are not made for people to walk around. Like, New York is interesting because so much of the street infrastructure in New York, like, precedes the automobile. You know, so, like, New York is better equipped for people to do all of this walking. I remember when I was in college, we went to Lenox, big mall in Atlanta, and there's another fancier mall across the way called Phipps Plaza. And they're close enough to walk to. But the game ain't built for you to walk. So it's these crazy wide streets for you to try to walk the man in the hand sign. You know what I'm saying? And I remember one time we did it, and I'm from Houston, so we don't walk nowhere. So I'm with these boys from up north. Those are walking places. And so we get the light, the man come up for us to walk, and we start walking. We get 1 foot in the street and the hand is up. And it wasn't the hand with the clock. It was just the hand, because the system is not set for people to walk. It's just not what it's created for. And so now as people are trying to move it back, I don't know how they're going to do it.
And in a lot of places, they can start by creating sidewalks.
Yeah, they could. But we still got all these cars. Like, the thing is, once they want to disincentivize car use, but we're not ready for all that yet. And once you want to disincentivize it, but you can't create a boondoggle for the super majority of people that are still using their cars. Like, those civil engineers, y'all going to earn your money on this one.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani, voicemail time. Old favorite. Was there anything that sparked the interest in your mind about doing this particular topic this week?
I figured we hadn't done it in a while. And I guess, you know, with the NCAA tournament coming up, there's some people who are watching that and seeing cats they played against in AAU and stuff like that. Like, this happens to people. Now, one day we'll have to do a better topic, which is not this one, which is people telling their stories of getting balled up by somebody who wound up being a pro. You know, the best ones is looking up at the TV and seeing that dude who either used to date your girl, currently dates your girl, tried to holler at your girl, or may have hollered at your girl, but you can neither confirm nor deny. Those stories are more entertaining, but these are good too.
Or how about knowing that one of your friend's ex-girlfriend is now with a current pro?
No. My homeboys in college, they had a homie who dated a girl who started dating a dude who played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But this was like 2002, like when they was the Super Bowl champions. So, you know what I'm saying? Like this is when they was balling. So, like, you couldn't avoid them.
Another topic for another time. But we had some really good ones this week. Our first one comes from James in D.C.
I went to Dunbar. Ended up playing with a few future pro football pro bowlers. I played with Vernon Davis, played with Vontae Davis, and Aurelius Ben. But my junior year, I think it was like 2004, we used to play teams from out of town, and we would go up to Ohio every year and play a different team. So my junior year or my senior, I can't remember, we went up to play Warren Harding up in Ohio. And my coach was talking about all week, like, yo, it's this other receiver who was, like, better than you. And I was like, man, ain't no receiver better than me. So I took it as a challenge. And lo and behold, it was Mario Manningham. Bo, the first half, scored 3 touchdowns. Luckily for me, he was also playing defense. I scored 2 touchdowns. He got so tired, he had to leave at halftime from busting our ass. Fast forward 2 years later, I'm a freshman at Penn State. Guess who's a freshman at Michigan? Mario Manningham. At that time, I think we were 7-0. Guess who caught the game-winning touchdown to make us 7-1? Mario Manningham.
Yo, okay. I'm glad that he actually turned out himself to be a D1 athlete, because otherwise I was going to call shenanigans on, you know, I got a couple touchdowns myself. Yeah, buddy, I bet you did. I bet you did, but nah, I believe him. After we got the full context, he's like, yeah, he ain't got nothing. Oh, he has plenty on me. Got it.
I got my licks in.
You know, I ain't just go out like no punk, but I believe every word my man just said, to be clear.
All right, this next one comes from Trey in Virginia.
So back when I was in high school, I was in the stands for this one, but there was this very well-known baseball prospect by the name of Russell Wilson, who happened to also dabble in a couple of other sports, one of them being football. So our football team is going up against him, and this dude goes off. He's shredding us through the air. He's shredding us on the ground. Nobody gets him down. Tortures us for a couple of years in that same fashion. I went to a rival high school. Fast forward a couple of years, he ends up going to NC State to play baseball, and he also happens to be on the football team there as well. And this time I'm at the University of Miami. They run up against him in a football game, and I'm sitting there like, whatever, Russell Wilson is a baseball player. And then he proceeds to shred the University of Miami for a couple hundred yards in the air, another maybe like 70 yards or so on the ground, a touchdown on the ground, another couple of them in the air. And I'm like, okay, so you're going to keep torturing me wherever I go. Fast forward, somehow this baseball player gets drafted into the NFL and is the starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks as a rookie. Fast forward to him playing at the time of the Washington Redskins, which I was a fan of at the time, in the playoffs, and he does it again. He's torturing everybody in the air and on the ground, and Russell Wilson is a solid dude, but he's been torturing me for the past 15 years of my life, and I'm tired of it.
Here's what I wonder about a dude like Russell Wilson, because I know he was small and that affected all this, right? But I don't understand how you destroy people at every level, and at no point are we like, yeah, I'm all in on this. Right. There was a yeah, but at every turn. Like, this dude was like a 2-star recruit. How? Like, I just don't see any way possible he was not destroying everybody that was there. I don't understand how.
The star system with recruits, you know, that comes out from rivals. Mm-hmm. It's a hit and miss thing, as you've discussed on this podcast. Like, how many, you know, 5-star recruits is your team getting in this offseason? Yeah. Doesn't exactly equate with success of the team. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because this last one is a tale of a team in LA that had like 3 5-stars on the same roster. It's a pretty interesting one. It's from Brian in Corona.
So I'm from California. I was born in LA, moved to Orange County area after I was about 10 years old. For my high school years, I went to an up-and-coming school called Beckman High School. Didn't really have no name about us. Wasn't no great program. But, you know, I went there with all my boys, and it was a good time. So we go to a 7-on-7 tournament. We play in a couple games to get started, to get the seeding. 4 games, we win 2, lose 2. So we're put in like the bottom half. Now, coincidentally, a few weeks before that, the Juana Paracera Gardena out of Gardena, California, the Cavaliers, they had actually just won a state championship led by George Farmer and Robert Woods. So unfortunately, we got to learn that George Farmer, Robert Woods, and Marquise Lee were all ready to play in this 7-on-7 tournament. Now, nobody at my school had heard of these people. Hardly any of them knew Gardena was an actual city. So, of course, I'm trying to explain to these men that we about to get ran. And, of course, my team is, you know, feeling themselves a little bit because we beat a couple teams we shouldn't have beat. So we feeling ourselves. We thinking we a little funky. I kid you not. First play, 45-yard post to George Farmer, nobody next to him. Next play, Marquise Lee, 9 route. I was the corner. I was nowhere near that man. And finally, Mr. Robert Woods, he didn't even catch a pass, man. He was just there. He didn't even play. At that point, they just didn't even put nobody else in. And they just kind of ended up beating us by like 40 or something. It was an ugly matchup. Luckily, I did get a little catch in the tub, but I got kicked out because I tried to high step my way into the end zone. And when you down 30 and doing that, my coach don't really feel that. But it was my part of pride. That was my win. So, you know, played 3 FIFA pros. You know, not all of them are top tiers, but damn, you don't want to show up to that weapon, man. Trust me, if you're from Cali, you know those boys were sick.
Yo, he was like, I was nowhere near that man. That was more what I was looking for. Like, I saw Russell Wilson be good. Yeah, that's cool. That right there, I was just like, what am I supposed to do with these dudes?
Yeah, that team, Marquise Lee, people forget about George Farmer because he didn't necessarily turn out to be that good, but he was a 5-star in every sense of the word. Robert Woods, too? Whew.
Yeah.
Junipero Serra, man, Gardena.
Yeah, I didn't realize that that school was in Gardena. Like, that's a private school, right?
I'd have to look it up.
Well, I just say this. I always imagined that it was a private school, and maybe I just had that wrong in my mind. Oh, wow. I'm looking at this website. It is not the highest of qualities. Okay. I got it. It's a private school, but it is our private school. I got you. It's all coming together now. All right. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We are now doing this thing three times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to CarMax. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Dalvin Brown of the Washington Post. Check out his story and what they're doing with smart speakers these days at WashingtonPost.com. Thanks to Scott Schwebke of the Southern California News Group. Check out his story on Panda Express's bizarre cult-like team-building seminar. You can check that out at DailyNews.com. Thanks to Linda Robertson of the Miami Herald. Check out her story on Florida being the deadliest state for pedestrians in the nation at MiamiHerald.com. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.